Welcome to the Dauntless Grace Exchange. I'm Megan.
And I'm Deidre. And today we have Kennedy Sheffett on our podcast as our Enneagram 8 in our series that we've been doing. I'm so excited to have you here, Kennedy. I'm going to read a quick bio for you to let our listeners know a little bit about you. She is wife to Josiah and dog mom to Ellie and Moses. She holds a master's of social work from LSU and currently serves as the Office on Violence Against Women project director for Greenville University. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
We actually met, Megan and I, both of us, through your former employer at Eden's Glory, where you worked as the program coordinator there for a safe home for survivors of trafficking. And we were able to connect on a couple of the Eden's Glory retreats with you as we came in as volunteers and did some Enneagram training. And then I actually got to work with you for a few months, a little window of time there before you moved on to Greenville University, which is also an employer that all three of us have shared.
Right. And that, and we worked with your husband at Greenville University.
Yes, I shared office with my husband. So we're all connected.
So yeah, we have a couple of connections here.
I think Josiah doesn't know what to do with me sometimes. If I still, like, sometimes I'll just randomly show up and walk through and he'll just like look at me like, what are you doing here?
You still working?
Call him out next time.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about your journey into like what you called you to social work and kind of how you've gotten to the place you are today in your career.
Yeah. So I remember being 16 and I was watching an episode of Criminal Minds and there was like trafficking happening on the show. And I just felt very burdened by that and was not really sure why that just stuck with me for like the several days after I watched that episode. And I was a junior in high school and my history teacher had us do a current events report, and the girl behind me said, Kennedy, you should really do something with sex trafficking. I don't know why that came to my mind, but that just seems like something like you would be really good at working at. I was like, okay, well, that's weird. And so since then I just did some like self-research. I grew up in Shreveport, Louisiana, and there's an organization there called Purchased Not for Sale, which is very similar to Eden's Glory, that I had a friend working for them. And so I did some trainings with them and just kind of self-educated on human trafficking, pursued a degree in social work so that I could work with survivors, pursued my master's in social work so I could work with survivors, and randomly found my way to Eden's Glory 3 years ago and worked with them until the last few months where I just accepted this opportunity working for Greenville, doing more, less direct practice with survivors and more education and informing university policy and things like that. So that's a new adventure for me, which is exciting. I definitely miss that one-on-one working with survivors, but excited to kind of step into a new realm of social work that I haven't gotten to do before. So, yeah. And now I forever have to tell people that I got my calling to work with survivors by watching Criminal Minds.
That's so, one does. Yeah.
One does.
I think that's amazing though, because you, well, this is so good for a segue into being an Enneagram 8, but one of the beautiful gifts that 8s bring to the world is this heart to right injustice. Like when you see it, you want to step up and take it on and, you know, stand up for the voiceless and stand up for the people who can't stand up for themselves. So I think that's just a perfect way for you to respond and such a great calling on your life, and you do it beautifully. So thank you for sharing that. That's neat. Yeah. So speaking of being an 8, tell us a little bit of just what it was like for you to learn about the Enneagram, maybe when that happened in your journey and what really solidified you that you were an 8 instead of maybe another type that a quiz told you or something, or maybe you tested as an 8. I don't know. I can't remember.
Yeah. So I first learned about the Enneagram in college. I had a friend reading that book, you know, The Road Back to You.
Yeah.
That one. And we did the little like test in the back, and I actually thought I could be a 2, a 3, an 8, or a 7 were my four numbers that I was kind of like ping ponging between. I really wanted to be a seven. I wanted that life for me, but it was not meant to be. And I settled on a two, and thought that I was a two for 2 or 3 years after that. That's the number that I identified as. And my other friend was talking to me about the Enneagram one time. She's like, I really think that you're an eight. And I just kind of had her explain why she thought that. And so I always thought that I just was a two that was kind of a B word. That's the language that I use. I don't know why it never crossed my mind that I could be an eight. I always like, I'm a two. That's just a little bit of a B word, and it's unfortunate, and I'm working on it, but that just is the way that it is. And
that is amazing.
I love it so much.
I was like, yeah. And so I had my friend Lizzie explain to me, you know, why she thought that I might be an eight. And she talked to me about how I was really good at confrontation and always like wanted to be outspoken and step in the middle of things, and was so quick to point out when I felt like something was incorrect. And I thought, okay, maybe. And so I sat with that for a few months. But there was something in me that I didn't want to let go of being a two. I think that being an eight kind of scared me because of the stereotype that eights get, yeah, that they really are B words. I don't know why I was scared of that stereotype when I called myself that for the 3 years prior. But finally came to terms with it. And was like, okay, yeah, I think I'm an eight. I really thought that I might be a two because of the line to eight and stress is why I really thought it. But the going to four and health, I didn't really identify with. But with the eight, I didn't really identify with going to a five and stress, but I could see going to a two and health. So those are the kind of things that I was, you know, sitting with and munching on. And eventually came, like, was looking at it, and actually was y'all's little handout that we got a few years ago that helped me be a lot more confident in being an eight, was how you can identify with both the healthy and unhealthy parts of a two, as well as with a five. And that really helped me in learning more about what being a five and stress looks like. And it's a lot, because I was like, I always have something to say and I get snappy, and that doesn't feel like a very, you know, five and stress thing to do. And then I thought, well, what are the things that are most painful for me? Mm. And what are the things that are most vulnerable for me? And those things I won't talk about. And I call it turtling. I turtle whenever I feel vulnerable. And so there are things that might have hurt me in the past, but if I don't see it as super vulnerable, I have no issue talking about it. So that's kind of what made me more confident in that, is, oh, whenever I feel vulnerable and unsafe and my inner child is trying to come out, I'm like, no, stay in your little box deep within, so that you don't have to come out and potentially is not a word, edit that out, potentially be hurt by someone or myself. So
I have so many follow-up things to say and ask. First of all, I just want to say, like, I think that you are spot on in saying that it was probably difficult to identify with that five part of you as an eight, because I think it takes, this is my opinion, I think it takes a lot more, like you said, for an eight to get so stressed by something that they actually need to jump numbers. I think eights are really good at just handling what is coming at them, right? Mm-hmm. So it takes something super painful for you to get to that vulnerable spot where you turtle in like a five. Whereas for me as a four, like, one comment and I'm spiraling to my two space. Like, it doesn't take a whole lot for me to go to a stress line, but I think it takes a lot more for eight. So I'm glad you said that. I think that does a lot of, like, gives a lot of clarity for people who are like, well, I just don't identify with that five line at all. Well, it probably takes a lot for them to get there.
Yeah. That was my biggest struggle in coming to terms with my eightness, was the identifying with the five line.
I have a follow-up comment that it's interesting that we call women the B word, but the guy that would be the exact same, we would just be like, he's so assertive. Look at what a great leader he is. So I don't think you're a B word. I've worked with you in several environments and you are amazing.
This is just, we were talking about my journey of coming to terms that I'm an eight, and I was like, oh no, I'm not an eight. I can't look back at any time in my life that I was like very 8-ish in my childhood, like, and I know that I would have been. And then I remembered the story about how when I was in the 8th grade, I really did not like my math teacher. He was not good at his job, in my opinion. And so I started a petition to get him fired because I thought that we deserved better as the student body of the 8th grade class of Herndon Magnet School. And now, like, I still have an Enneagram crisis every few months, and I'm like, maybe I'm not an 8, maybe I'm something else. And my sister-in-law, Megan, every time I do is like, Kennedy, you started a petition to get your 8th grade math teacher fired. You are an 8. And I say, oh, yes, so true.
This is done. When in doubt.
When in doubt, check in with Megan. She'll know. She'll set me straight. So that's just a little tidbit that I was thinking about, and I was like, yeah, that's another thing that I go back to. I was like, okay, yeah.
That's great. I love that. I'm sure we have some 8s on here that are really like, oh, yep, I got a few of those.
I want to point out also just something that you said when you first learned about this and you were struggling with 8, 3, 7, and 2. All of that makes sense to me because 8 and 2 share a line, because 8 and 7 would share a wing, and because 3, 7, and 8 are all part of that aggressive stance, they're going to have some similar energy and relational like characteristics. So that's where I think learning about all of the numbers really helps people solidify their own number instead of just going, oh, this is me and that's it. Because when you were able to kind of learn about everything and let other people speak into that, you saw the connections and why it made sense that those 4 numbers were all things you were bouncing between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that 3, 7, and 8 sometimes can look similar just because they're so much more forward thinking than even a 2 would be, obviously, since they're in that dependent stance, but just that energy that they carry in life, which is probably why you're like, I kind of want some of that 7 energy. I mean, you already have it, you know, you've got some of that 7 energy.
Yeah. 3 was another number that I wrestled with a lot as well. And I wrestled with that a lot deeper than I wrestled with the 2 because I really identify with the inherent desire to be worthy. That the 3 has. And so I was like, oh, like that's a big deal. So for a long time, it was also really hard for me to process my 8-ness because 1, I didn't know what is me because this is the way the Lord made me and what is me because of the trauma that I've experienced. Yeah. So that was really hard for me. And tying that back into my struggle with maybe being a 3 was, I think that this inner desire, like I want to be seen as worthy, I want other people to view me as like worth their time, is mostly because of rejection that I felt in my past. And also like not wanting to be rejected is a really big 8 thing as well. And so just like those language shifts of, is it because I like have a deep inherent fear of rejection and abandonment, which is an 8 thing, or is it like I don't feel worthy and I'm scared other people won't see that as well, if that makes sense?
It does. And we don't talk about harmony triads a ton on here, but 8s are part of that rejected relationist triad, so that word would kind of be something that would spark at an 8.
It's so nuanced and so cool. I love it when people are willing to really take this journey because it's so fun to talk about all of these connections and the nuance between like especially for a 2 and a 3. 2s want to love, be loved and belong, and 3s want to feel worthy. Like, who wouldn't say, yes, that's something I want, you know? So it's until you start looking a little bit further into what that means for that type, it is kind of hard to sort through that for sure. Okay, well, I feel like we've already touched a little bit on some of these connecting lines just because of the way that you got to the point of knowing your number and that 2 line being so strong. When we put IFS language to that, you know, we call these parts of ourselves, and especially these managers, do you see some of those protectors in your life in that 2 line, and how did they serve you?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I would say like a really big manager for me, I have 3 that I'm thinking of. I think one of my biggest ones is definitely humor, and not just humor of like, you know, to a certain degree, humor can be a very healthy defense mechanism of just, you know, finding the irony in situations that you're a part of. But I take it to the degree of like, all right, I've grown a lot in this area in the last couple of years, but especially college and high school, I couldn't talk about things that I went through without making jokes about it. And that was protecting me from feeling that vulnerability piece. And I haven't really used the analogy of my inner child is trying to like come out of its little box, but I want to keep her in before today, which is really random. But that's really is like how I felt was my humor was saying, no, like little Ken, go back into this box in here because you're very safe in here because nobody has access to you except for me, was a big one. I think
That
another.
humor was like a good barrier then to keep her safely hidden. I would say that's probably a fairly common eight trait. Of the few eights that I know in my life, humor is one of the, like when we do the talk styles, we talk about how eight's talk style is commanding. And some, it usually will, what I've seen, express through humor first. You know, if they can get the control of how, where the pace of the room, the energy of the room, or where other people are in relationship to them through humor, they don't have to go on to other kinds of power plays.
Or stuff that becomes more destructive. Like that's because they're pretty aware too, like and that like humor doesn't destruct on other people like some other talk styles might, or like some other protections might.
Yeah, so that feels like a really accurate eight, and especially for that more vulnerable inner child, because that's one of the things that an eight would fear. Not to make you just a stereotype. I mean, I'm just saying it fits like that model really neatly, and they don't want people to see that vulnerable.
Yeah, and I think that, in my reasoning, if it's funny, then it's not painful, right? And even things that were very painful, I would still like try my best to make myself and others laugh about it because I didn't want to be hurt, but I also didn't want anyone else to think that I was hurting either. And nobody is going to question, jokes that are being made. Most people won't. They'll just see that as joke, move on, which is what I wanted. But I didn't want that because it still made me feel rejected. So
It's always
those
those
are the cycles.
control, yeah, like you were trying to control how you were vulnerable, but then it ended up self-sabotaging what you really truly desired with that connection piece underneath everything.
I think another one of my managers is over-explaining, which is honestly a double whammy because I have ADHD that I don't take medication for, and over-explaining is a really big part of that ADHD, like a really big symptom of ADHD for some people, and it is for me. And so I do it to protect myself, but also I do it as a symptom of my ADHD. And so it's almost like a snowball effect. And it's like I can't stop explaining myself. And that's one thing that in one of the last spaces that we were all in together, I was still processing it. So I didn't really share with the group. But I was like, I know that there's something connected with over-explaining myself and like these very real unchangeable parts of who I am that I just don't like very much. So I was trying to like connect the dots with that. And I was like, I know that these two things are connected. I'm not really sure how they're connected though. And I think one of my biggest things that I struggle with even now is just feeling misunderstood and misinterpreted. A lot of it is classic eights, why do you always have an issue with something? Why do you have a comment for everything? And for me, it's like, well, you're not understanding me. It's not because I have a problem with everything. It's because, I want something done well, or I think that someone I care about is being mistreated, or fill in the blank. And so I want to over-explain myself so that they understand me. But also at the heart of that, I'm trying to justify it to myself as well. Because what if what they're saying is true? What if it really is just I have a comment for everything and I, am making mountains out of molehills, or why can't I just relax and not have a problem with everything? What if that is true? And so it's almost like I want them to understand what I'm trying to get at and the points I'm trying to make, but I'm also silently trying to justify it to myself of, no, this is why you're not XYZ. But at my core, I'm so scared that that is who I am. And if that's true, I don't like that about myself. And so, yeah, that's kind of like, that's still something I'm processing. So, you know, you could ask me in 6 months the same question, I could answer it completely differently. But that's kind of where I'm at in my processing right now with that.
When we had Tammy Sollenberger on, she touched on this a little bit, but we haven't really talked to anybody in our interviews about it. There are parts of ourselves, kind of like sibling rivalry, that don't like the role that the other part has taken. And so the way you're talking about that kind of makes me think a little bit like that, like almost like, I don't know if it's an actual five part, but almost like this five part that's like, no, listen, I've done my research and I know that this work, but it's kind of doesn't like, it's like judging the way the eight's just maybe impetuously like running forward. So it's trying to like slow it down and tell, and it's this interesting, like Megan, do you remember this? We talked a little bit about this, but I don't know that anyone else has fleshed out an example of that, that I think is so clear. Like in our self-led person, we're kind of parenting these parts of ourselves that are like children. We're like reparenting ourselves. So it'd almost be like one kid who's like, they're the eight that's running into battle and whatever. They're not even thinking, they're just going into do mode. And then the other one's like, that's not the way you're supposed to do that. And they're like telling them all the reasons why maybe there's a better approach and maybe we should, and please don't miss
it. Yeah. And if there's a two part that's like, oh, and now it's causing a relational thing, then that's the wrong method. So back off. But no, this is the right thing to do. So then your two and your eight go back and forth. So I think that's a really great example of that.
Right. Yeah. And I had an example, but I want to.
Well, like ones have an inner critic, but everybody has critical parts, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the fact that you're kind of standing outside of it, watching yourself be critical of that thing is even probably another part that's outside of that, you know? I mean, there's so many parts that gets a little into almost borderline DID, but we won't go there. But we have a lot of parts of us that are working to protect us. And they all have different ideas of how to best do that, you know? So I just thought that was interesting. We hadn't really discussed that yet.
It's a good thing to stay curious about, though. I know you said you're still processing it, and I actually would be curious to talk with you again in 6 months, because as you're curious about it and you get distance from all of those parts to see how they interact and how they play and what roles they should take on to really serve yourself better instead of like those old things they've been pigeonholed into.
Right. And I think also it just is fueled by a lot of this bickering within myself. Yes. Is just also so fueled by who, you know, the church says we're supposed to be and who the world says we're supposed to be. And also trying to reconcile, well, what if I'm not either of those things? Or what if I'm both of those things? Or what if, you know, I just go by what Jesus says about me and don't care what society or, you know, whoever says. And so, like, I get in those spaces, I'm like, yes, this is who the Lord created me to be. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Amen and amen. But then I get in those spaces and, you know, can get, like, some pushback to that. And I'm like, oh, maybe that's why. Like, maybe I shouldn't be that way. Or maybe that's my flesh and not the part, you know. Not that God didn't make all of our parts, but, like, what if that's my flesh and not, you know, the spirit in me that's working? And so it just fuels the fire. But then I get angry that someone is trying to tell me why it's not a big deal, or like, you know, why something I care about isn't important or something. And so it just is like this fuel added to the fire all the time until, like, you know, I just have to honestly just say, okay, I can't think about this anymore because I'm too in my feels about it now. I need to step back and just, like, do some self-care for a little bit, and then I'll revisit it. But yeah,
it's important. For one of the things you just said, like, there's no bad parts because, like, we were, God created us. And that's like kind of the one of the mantras of IFS language, is that there are no bad parts, just parts stuck in bad roles. Right. So I think that, like, understanding that, like, okay, all these parts are serving me in some way, and how they served me when I was 4 or 10 is not the same way they need to serve me now. And so they're in, like, a little kid role, or they're in a self-protective role that I don't need now because I found so much healing or whatever. And so figuring out the new roles for the same parts of ourselves is really, that's the work, you know?
Right. And that's, you reminded me, that's what I wanted to hit on earlier, was I don't want it to be one way or the other. I don't want it to be, you know, this, you know, person seeking justice and the one who is not afraid of confrontation is who I am and who I need to be. But I also don't want to go the other way and say no, because that messes with relationships. And, you know, so just trying to find, like, my processing now is kind of trying to find that balance of how can I continue to utilize that part of me that is really good at picking up on injustices or flaws in the system or in inconsistencies, because I do believe that that's something the Lord has gifted me with. That also is just really not a fun gift to have. It's not fun. I don't like it. I wish it wasn't for me. But that's just kind of where I'm at. And so how can I appreciate and help those parts of me grow in the spirit, like be spirit led, like Jesus was about all of those things, while also not getting so engrossed in that part of me that I lose another very real part of me, which is kindness and grace and mercy and in relationships. And so I know that these two parts of me will be friends one day. They're just acquaintances right now.
That's good. Well, I think getting, like Megan said, getting curious about some of those critical parts that you are observing having a reaction to a part of you, and just getting sitting with them a little bit. It's uncomfortable. And I know, you know, eights don't particularly love sitting in their feelings, but it gives you actually some distance from your feelings when you get close and realize that's not all of you. It's just a part of you. And what is it how is it serving you? How is she like working on your behalf to protect you? It's usually so, the reintegration is so closely tied to the thing that we're called to do. So all of the things you're saying, like mercy is the flip side to justice, you know? And so these things will flow together more and more beautifully as you reconcile that these aren't at odds with one another. I think the biggest problem is when they're trapped, like she was saying, in this younger version of ourselves protecting ourselves. And now we have more tools, especially you, like you've got so many beautiful tools. I've heard you like process, you know, lies and truths that are replacing those lies. So I know that you are not facing the world today in the same self-protection you were when you were a little girl or a teenager or even in college. But this work does seem to be a lifelong
unending.
It really does. We get a little less scared of it the more we can trust that it's not terrifying to be vulnerable, but still kind of hard, especially in the moment when things just go on autopilot internally.
Yeah. Every time I like make myself be vulnerable or do the sitting with myself or all the things that are really difficult but super necessary, I'm like, Jesus, I better be getting some jewels on my crown for this. Because I'm working hard.
What the payoff?
I hate that you said that you don't like that part of yourself that wants to like right the wrongs and fight for justice, because like that is such a gift that I wish I had more of. Like if you look at those 8 C's of IFS, and I don't know them, but they're like compassion, curiosity, clarity, confidence. Like I feel like confidence is one of those gifts given to an 8 who can go step into a situation that like I don't possess that very naturally, and I've had to really work at that. And so I just want to kind of challenge you to like befriend those parts of yourself, because those are beautiful, good gifts and they bring a lot. And I know you're doing the work to do that, but like I want to affirm those parts of you.
Thanks. And it's not necessarily that like, yeah, I think it just goes back to the things that like you, Deidre, you said earlier, like women get called the B word for doing stuff like that, especially mm-hmm. in the church. Not that people in the church are calling each other B words, but like same sentiment of, yeah. You know, that is just not who a Proverbs 31 woman is supposed to be.
I think she was a kick butt businesswoman is who the Proverbs 31 woman was.
And yeah, JL. And right. JL like drove a tent peg through some guy. You know, I think we got some examples of some warriors. Yeah.
Right. And so like, it's just the struggle of, I just want to do those things well. And it is hurtful when those parts of, when I don't feel that those parts of me are accepted. Yeah. And so that makes me question, like, okay, should I not like these parts of me? But then I flip flop so quickly. Like, some days I'm like, man, I just really, like, I need to take a chill pill. I need to be more go with the flow. Like, I just need to be fine and it's okay. Like, it's all going to work out. And then 20 minutes later, I'm like, no, like, F that. Like, sorry, probably shouldn't say that on a podcast for the Lord.
All you're doing is using letters for all the bad words. It's totally fine. They're not.
I think that's hilarious.
It's like the most G-rated.
Yeah, I guess my mom listens to this later. So, like, yeah, but like a few minutes later, I'm like, no, like, it's important. This is who the Lord made me to be. And so, yeah, right. Working on, like, I need to stop going on one side of the pendulum and then all the way back to the other and find myself in the middle somewhere. I think the third one was maybe like rationalization is a big one. Whether that is rationalizing, you know, my own actions or other people's actions. And yeah, so that's a big one that, again, is just another way for me to keep my inner child in her safe space in the box. Because if I rationalize things enough, then I won't have to confront, and then I won't have to risk rejection is kind of the thought process behind that. But again, it's just not doing the work all just is painful in a different way.
Yeah. So, does that keep you from feeling? Is that how that part protects you?
Maybe sometimes, but it kind of like can get pretty like self, I can't think of the word, self-depreciating a lot of times because it doesn't make the feelings go away. I think that I want it to make the feelings go away, but it doesn't. And so because I'm rationalizing and I can sit here and say, well, logically, I shouldn't feel this way because X, Y, Z, but I still feel that way. And then I kind of get into like this self-loathing spiral of, you know, I'm all of these things that I don't like about myself and I'm doing the hard work to change it. Like, I'm praying through the pain and I'm, you know, processing it out and I'm trying to acknowledge that I feel this way while also acknowledging these things that I'm rationalizing. And so I shouldn't be the way that I am. And so I always quickly jump into this self-loathing, which I think ties back to, like, you know, I, like, honestly, like, have gotten in spaces where I just, like, I really just suck. Like, I suck. I'm not a great person. And I wish that there's something I could do to change that. But I've worked on changing that for so long and it hasn't happened. Who knows if it'll ever happen. So I get into that, you know, like, that's what rationalization usually gets me to. It's not numbing. It just is.
Sounds like
a different way. Yeah.
It sounds like kind of a five part that gets warring, like that, trying to rationalize the emotion away, but it wars with like the, like, kind of inherent passion that's in you as an eight that feels kind of those really big emotions a lot to propel you forward. And it sounds like right. They go kind of to battle together.
Right. Yeah. And also, like, I say like all this, but also want to add the disclaimer, like, you know, I don't say any of these things of like the confrontation or, you know, maybe I should, like, I need to like call out when I see things that I like genuinely don't believe are correct. I don't always just go around saying, hey, I don't think that that's right just because it's not a personal preference. Like, usually when I speak up, it's because I really believe something is wrong. But I also take that and recognize, like, I see the world very differently than everyone else does. And so I try to get myself out of those spaces of where an eight can so easily get to of, well, I know that I'm right and I have all this proof that I'm right. And sometimes I get into my five space. So now I have research to back it up. But I like try not to get into that space. And I know that that's where I like naturally gravitate towards and also try to recognize, you know, everyone sees the world differently, and that doesn't mean that I'm automatically correct just because it gets my blood pumping about something. And so that's another like part that just jumps into like the rationalization and the over explaining and all of these other managers that I tend to get into, is because I'm at the same time really trying to put myself in the other person, people, whomever, like in someone else's shoes and say, okay, what might this look like from their perspective? And it does really help. Like, it really helps a lot with just like anger that I might feel, or sometimes I'm really not justified in how I feel. And sometimes it really is just, this is the way that I think it should be done. That does not mean that that is the only correct way. But I think sometimes in my intensity, I can take it too far as well. So it's just like all those things that I just kind of have to juggle. And here's the thing, is that I'm really bad at juggling.
Well, on your behalf, I am kind of ready to smash the whole patriarchy, because I've met a lot of male eights who really like being eights. And I've met some female eights who don't love it as much. And I think that is a societal stigma, like you said. And so on your behalf, I would like to just say that is a symptom of the patriarchy, that you shouldn't, that you think that there's something wrong with being a strong, assertive, confident woman who knows how to right the wrongs of the world.
Thanks. Sometimes I need to be reminded of that.
You are in exactly the right role for where God has put you to make a difference in the world. And I think that's beautiful. So you keep reminding yourself that. Having said that, don't be afraid to keep befriending these other parts, because on all of them, they have served you for a long time really well somehow, even if you don't love how they're like, it's kind of like this adulting thing where we go, oh, I don't need that the same way I did when I was younger. And that's why it doesn't fit anymore. It doesn't feel right anymore, you know? And I'm going to ask a really vulnerable question. So when you talk about your inner child, like this is the exile part of us. I think that we have more than one. I mean, kind of, we have one, right? But we have like all these different ages and these different hard things that we've experienced, different traumas, different relationships that have impacted us and given us different belief systems about ourselves. It still does kind of come back to like a core fear that they would all share probably. And I know you said earlier, just like believing that you're worthy was one word that you used, but do you have language to put around some of the lies that exile belief, and maybe some ways that Jesus has met you in that and given you some truth to counteract that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just remember, like, you know, I've been like in the world of working through and processing trauma for a few years. I've also attended counseling for a long time. So I've done a lot of like self-reflection, and I can very like vividly like look back on my life and like look at my life chronologically and see, this is genuinely what and it's not even what I felt or thought about myself. It's that this is what I genuinely, fully, wholeheartedly believe about myself, that like I am stupid. Like, that's a big one. I don't know why stupid was the one that I came back to, but I came back to that a lot. And Jesus definitely like broke that chain for me. And so praise be to him. But that was a really big one. Another one, like the B word, like that was another really big one. And like, I still struggle with that one. And I still catch myself like pulling Josiah aside and say, like, do you think that I am a B word? Like, you can be honest with me. I can take it. He's like, no, Kennedy, like, I don't think that about you, and you're not. So like, that's one that I'm still working on. And that I'm over dramatic. That is probably the biggest one. I honestly don't really think that I've started processing that one yet. Because that is one that I still kind of believe about myself. And that, you know, if I wasn't so dramatic, then how many problems would I not have had to go through? Like, if I wasn't so dramatic about them. And that comes from being told that. Like, I was told that when I was a child. So, like, I can kind of pinpoint where that came from. And that I'm too much, like, over dramatic and too much was that. And so that kind of ties back into this fear of being abandoned and rejected, and that people are unworthy, is that I'm too much. And if people see the full force of who I am and how I feel, like if people knew how strongly I felt my feelings and how I think, when I'm in those like more intense spaces, then they would want nothing to do with me. And like, that's definitely still a battle that I'm fighting. Like, I can't sit here and say that I'm fully like healed and freed and delivered from those things. I believe that it's coming. I do also believe that this is not, I hope I'm wrong. I would love this for me if this was a moment where Jesus stepped in and said, boom, healed, done, delivered, let's move on with our lives. I don't think that that is the path for me. I think that this is something that Jesus really wants me to journey through. And so I'm kind of in the middle of it. Like I said, like Jesus has definitely delivered me of like the stupid one. Was I like that's a very specific one that I can pinpoint and say, like, I remember feeling that way. I remember saying that to and about myself all of the time. And I remember the moment that like Jesus met me and said, no, like we are done with that. I also like one thing that was really helpful for me is I remember one time I like was having a panic attack because I believed that I made a mistake and that it led to the harm of another person. And I just could not handle that. And the truth is, like, it wasn't my fault. Like, it's just something that happens whenever you are in social work. And it's something that happens is that, the people you work with end up in places you wish that they weren't in. But I wholeheartedly believe that, this person that I worked with was in that harmful position because I didn't care enough and because I neglected my responsibility to her. And I carried that for a long time. I numbed it for a really long time. And then there was just like a breaking point for me. And I had a panic attack about it. And Jesus met me in that space and he gave me a whole list. I wish that I had my planner because I would pull the list out and say, like, read all the things that Jesus said about me. But some of the ones that I remembered was loved and worthy, and Spitfire was a really big one, which kind of ties back to Set Free Decatur puts on a retreat for the Eden's Glory staff every summer. And so this was summer 2022, and they prayed over all of us. And that was one of the things that got prayed over me was that Jesus was turning me into a spitfire for the Holy Spirit. And so like that's one of the things. And that moment, while it didn't heal me completely, it gave me a new solid foundation to stand on. And so when I find myself in those spaces of I'm just being a B word. I'm just being overdramatic. If I weren't this way, then I wouldn't have these problems. And then I would be happier and everyone else around me would be happier. And the reason people aren't happy is because I'm this way. Like I definitely still have those moments. But I still have a new, more solid foundation that I can go back to and say, no, like Jesus said these things to me and about me, and he's the creator of the flipping universe. So who am I to argue with him about it? And
Great.
so like that definitely was a big like help in my healing journey for that. And also just a message to the listeners, it's okay if you are in the middle of your healing journey and like it's gonna happen and it's gonna come. And just because the struggle is there doesn't mean that progress has not been made. So,
And that and it probably won't end, like we said earlier. It just keeps going.
yeah. I'm gonna get through this and there's gonna be something else. So it's gonna be really
Exactly.
hard.
Man,
And
thank
anyone
you.
that
Oh, sorry. Oh, Kennedy, just thank you like for everything that you shared. You're not the first eight we've had on here before, but I feel like you really went into those vulnerable spaces with us and with our listeners, and that's going to be so impactful, I think, for people who identify as eights or know an eight or love an eight. So I just really want to just thank you for how openly you shared.
thank you. I'm happy to be here. Thankful for y'all giving me the space to share and the safety to be vulnerable.
And that wraps up another episode of the Dauntless Grace Exchange. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app and leave a review so other people can find us.
You can follow us on social media to stay connected. We're on Instagram at Dauntless Grace Ministries, and our Facebook page is Dauntless Grace.
For more about the Enneagram, visit our website at dauntlessgrace.org for coaching and training opportunities. And you can follow me at Enneagram Megan on Instagram.
And be sure to check out our website for more information about today's podcast. Plus, you can click the resources tab to find books by all the authors we've spoken to or about. And you can find it at dauntlessgrace.org.